So what I like to do when I'm playing Two Truths and a Lie, other than have a microphone that's working, is I frequently use as one of my things for people to try to guess whether or not it's true, I frequently say that I spent 5 weeks in Finland. Exactly! This is the reaction that most people have. They think that that's the lie, but it's actually true. When I was in high school, I did an exchange program with the Rotary Club, and I had hosted at my home with my mother for 5 weeks a young man who was from Finland, and then I went back with him to the town in Finland where he lived, which was called Lappeenranta, which is north of Helsinki. And I spent 5 weeks there, and I have to tell you that I did not look like most Finnish people. You will be very surprised to know. And so while I was there, I learned a lot of things about how where we live and where we've grown up and who we know and what's familiar to us changes our sense of the world. So, for example, when I was in Finland, it was the summertime, and it was light, so light, super duper late at night. So they had these special, amazing blinds that were unlike anything I had ever seen, and I thought they were really strange when I first got there, and I thought, why would you have something like that on your window? But it was these really thick blinds to make it as dark as possible in your room, because even at midnight, it looked like it was the middle of the afternoon. It was a little bit strange to me. I know! Exactly, it was crazy. And then the other thing that was super cool that I had never seen before, and I'll get you in just a minute, Finn, is I had never used before a sauna. But a sauna is like a little tiny room that you go in and it's really, really hot. And you go inside and it makes you sweat a lot and it kind of feels good because it's kind of relaxing if you think heat is relaxing. I know some people don't, but they had one in their house because a lot of people in Finland, because it's cold for so long, like to have a sauna in their home, and then some of them even run out in the snow. When they get really hot, they get hot and sweaty, and then they go outside and they get really cold, and they like that feeling. And they go inside and outside, inside, outside. So it's kind of, they have all kinds of different traditions and ways of being that I wasn't used to, and I had to get used to the fact that what I thought was kind of the way the world worked or the way things were wasn't actually really true, that there were lots of other people who lived lots of different ways and had lots of other ways of doing things. So Finn's going to say something, and then I'm going to see whether you guys have anything else. Really? Wow. Finn says that if you go to the UK, they're so unaccustomed to seeing people with red hair, sometimes people will actually try to take a sample of your hair. That's kind of fascinating, too. See? So there are all kinds of... the point of my time with you this morning is to say there are all kinds of things we can learn, not only by traveling, but just by talking with people who have different ideas and different perspectives than we do. And I'm going to take Nolan's comment, and then we're going to wrap up. They were not made of foil, but they were metal. They were, like, really thick metal. He wanted to know more about the blinds, so... Clearly, Nolan and I could talk about the blinds for a long time, but I think I better let you go to your classes. So can we join hands, please, for our prayer time before you guys leave? Spirit of life and of love, we are grateful for all of the experiences that broaden our minds and, even more importantly, our hearts, that show us there are many different ways to be human, that there are many different ways to love and care about one another and about our planet. For all that we have learned, for all the ways that we have grown, and for all the ways that we will in the future, we give thanks this morning. Blessed be, and amen. Can you join me now in that peaceful, reflective, humble, and open place in your being, in your soul. Spirit of life and of love, presence known to us by many names, mystery of mysteries. We recognize that this may be the only moment of stillness we have all week. This may be the only time we truly look within and ask, how is it with my spirit? We recognize that in our comings and in our goings, we sometimes lose sight of what is going on within us. We sometimes lose track of what is most precious and meaningful to us. In this world which so much prizes knowing facts and being right, we ask for the courage and the strength to remain curious. To confess when we don't have it all figured out, to be vulnerable and open to the lessons that life still has to teach us. Help us, Great Spirit, when those moments of busyness and uncertainty come, to take ourselves to those places that remind us of ultimate things, that remind us of larger things. Perhaps we will find ourselves singing as we did this morning, I brought my spirit to the sea. I stood upon the shore, I gazed upon infinity, I heard the waters roar. Help us to keep track of infinity and the infinite possibilities in our own lives. For all of this and this moment of silence we will now spend together, we lift our hearts in mindfulness. Amen.
I'm going to take you back in time a bit. Do any of you remember these old television game shows? Truth or Consequences? To Tell the Truth? I've Got a Secret? Who Do You Trust? Each program was loosely based on someone answering questions posed by a guest or a panel of guests who then tried to ascertain if that person was in fact telling the truth about a certain topic or issue. It was harmless fun and provided some humor in a time when television was a new phenomenon. Truth in advertising and news broadcasting would be put under the microscope somewhat later. Have we grown up in a world not trusting much of what we read or hear? Are we jaded to every new medical research revelation or the newest improved gadget that will make our lives easier and less stressful? What can we believe with any kind of certainty? What happens when truths collide? For a lot of us, it can be very confusing. Over the past four Sundays, we listened to four very distinct addresses. The first one by Reverend Malloy was our proposed name change and what the term universalist meant to us. The second Sunday, Reverend Shauna addressed the randomness and the arbitrary nature of science and physics. On the third Sunday, we heard about the horrific conflicts in some parts of our worn, torn world and the very real dilemma on which side we would choose to take a stance. And finally, last Sunday, Penelope chose to talk on how to balance our lives when we felt overwhelmed and stretched to the limit, and how we could withdraw with grace. Sometimes I feel that I am bombarded with too much information and struggle to know what to do without completely closing down. How does one disseminate what is worth believing and what can be discarded? That is the challenge we live with. Can we believe one thing and then hear another point of view and change our minds without jeopardizing our personal convictions? We do not have to choose just one belief out of many on a given subject. At one time, we may lean in one direction and at another time in an alternate direction. It is a curious dichotomy. What wisdom can we learn from each other? What knowledge and insight can we glean from telling our stories and still keep our integrity? I believe that we, as Unitarian Universalists, are compelled to look deeper into these issues, and that we, as responsible citizens of the world and this community, are to approach one another with an openness surrounded by love and compassion. Are we curious enough to have these conversations? To really hear one another? Do we listen with a pure and humble heart? Are we considerate of each other's vulnerabilities? Are we capable of changing our positions on long-held opinions? Truthfully, I believe we are.
It's good to see you all. It's only away for a week, but it feels like it was not that long at all. This morning's reading is from an excerpt from an essay by a woman named Claire Huang Kinsley. The essay is entitled, Questions People Have Asked Me, Questions I Have Asked Myself. And it's from a book entitled Miscegenation Blues, Essays by Mixed Race Women, which was edited by Torontan Carol Camper. So this excerpt from Questions People Have Asked Me, Questions I Have Asked Myself, by Claire Huang Kinsley. Question number 5. What do they see and why? Sometimes when people aren't perceptive enough to notice something, they take for granted that it isn't there. People often assume that I'm white, nothing but white. That, I think, is an understandable mistake. What gets to me, though, is if after finding out that their assumption was wrong, they nevertheless figure that it was inevitable, that anybody in their place would have thought the same thing, that this assumption was entirely a result of the way I look and nothing to do with the way they see. Too often, people don't stop to ask themselves how their own experience may influence what they see. I was once trying to talk about this whole thing with a white acquaintance of mine, and she said, I don't usually notice what race people are so much as things like the way they talk, the way they express themselves. And you know, I didn't say this then, but I'll say it now. Maybe you don't notice because you never had to notice. How often have you ever scanned a room full of faces in the hope of spotting people who might, just might, have the same racial background as you? When you see another white person in the subway or the supermarket, do you ever feel a tug, an impulse to go up to that person and say, "Are you white? You are? What's it been like for you?" And when that white person gets off the subway or disappears behind a stack of paper towels without you having had the nerve to say a thing. Do you ever feel slightly wistful as you watch them go? When it's all true. Perhaps some of you are wondering what that reading has to do with this morning's topic. Well, in my reflecting about our truths and how we share them and how we relate to one another when our sense of what is true is divergent from someone else's, I came to the realization that it has everything to do with being an identity issue. What we know or believe or understand about life has been indelibly shaped and marked by our experiences. In a way, it is a wonder when you think about it that we don't disagree all the time about everything. Who we are has everything to do with how we see the world and interpret what we see, which in turn then impacts our passions and our causes, and then how we talk about it and how we find ways to meet in our differences. This is, to me, where the deep spiritual work begins. When I was younger, I had the idea that things were clear-cut, that just about any and all situations had a right and a wrong answer, that there was a truth with a capital T that could be discovered with enough research and digging. Over time, as I have aged, I have encountered more and more gray areas and seen situations in which more than one truth was at play, alive and equally valid simultaneously. Again and again, I have seen that I was wrong. Most instances in life don't come down to a matter of who is right or whose truth wins. Most anything that we could discuss, from theological perspective to human psychology to global politics, is not like a debate club, pro and con, microphoned joust at the end of which a winner will be declared. Friends, there is no victory to be claimed. There is instead an understanding to be reached through the thickets of nuance and complexity and gradations of meaning. We will have to listen to what is said to us and what is behind what is said. For what you are trying to tell me and not what I want to hear. Past my resistance or my anger or my certainty to the discomfort of tension and lack of clarity. I will confess to you this morning that I have spent a fair amount of my life in a more conflict-avoidant posture than is healthy. Only in the past decade have I actually been working on this and have begun to look that fear of conflict in the eye. In my recent effort to wade into the water of better understanding conflict, I took an insightful workshop in February. The colleague leading that workshop had many gems of wisdom to share, but this morning I just want to lift up two of them. Number one, the first thing she said was, if you are in the midst of a disagreement with someone and you notice that everything you seem to be saying is explaining your rationale, why you believe as you do, why you think other people should believe as you do, why, after your vast exploration of this subject, you have found the right way. She says, if you find yourself doing this, then you know that common ground is not likely to be found, that a resolution is not right around the corner. She said, what's happening as you get more and more adamant about your position and your rightness is that you are no longer deeply listening to the other person in the conversation with you. You are simply trying to convert the other person to your view. You are simply, really, when it comes down to it, saying, if you only saw things the way I see things, you would agree with me. So here, let me bring you over to the right way, which is my way. The problem, of course, is they will never see things the way you see things. They have their own life. They have lived their own set of experiences that has brought them to the conclusion that they now hold. So arguing more adamantly your position, your belief, only usually leads, she said, to a more polarized conversation. You getting more and more deeply entrenched in your perspective. I almost picture hunkering down in a bunker. And the other person doing the same, equally trying to convert you to their truth, hunkering down in their own bunker. The second thing she taught us, which was just remarkable, was she modeled for us this exercise that helps get to the bottom and the root of our feelings and motivations. It's kind of an interesting thing. I'm going to come out from behind her. She stood in the middle of the room, and she asked for two volunteers, which, you know, nobody ever wants to volunteer for these things, but she said it's really easy. And she had two people come on either side of her, and one person was supposed to help her get at what was going on in this argument that she had with her daughter just this morning on the phone. She was going to work through this with us, right? So the one person was the voice, kind of her inner voice, trying to help her understand her feelings and motivations that were there in the conversation with her daughter. The other person represented kind of her daughter, the actual conversation she then might actually have with the daughter to follow up to this disagreement that they had had. Now, this was remarkable because the role of the person that was her inner voice had only one thing that they had to say. They just had to repeat a question over and over and over again until she was done. So the speaker would say, you know, when we have this conversation, I bought you a train ticket, and now you're turning it down, and it really bugs me. You know, it bugs me that you're rejecting this thing that I really wanted to do for you. And the role of her inner voice person was simply to say, is there more? Well, actually, you know, this is like a pattern that we've had where I try to do something nice for you and you put it aside and you just can't accept my gift. Is there more? And it went on like that for about 5 minutes of her just going through and unpacking all this stuff, every layer of every nuance of everything that she and her daughter had shared over 40 years of trying to figure out how to relate to each other. And after a while of this, is there more, there was a time she'd be like, okay, yeah, I'm done for now. And she'd go over here, and she'd talk, you know, I hear you're really, you know, you want to go, but you're not sure about childcare, and I can see how that would be really hard for you, but you know, it really just drives me crazy that you can't. And she would go back and forth in this conversation until not only did she fully understand her own feelings and motivations and what was at stake for her, but she could even kind of put a little bit of that aside to actually understand where the daughter was coming from and really hear her and really have a conversation with her daughter that wasn't just about all of the other conversations that were in the room, if you will. It was amazing to witness the layers and layers and layers of meaning and motivation and feeling in one single conversation. And just to think about how true that is every time we're trying to understand another person, that we are bringing many selves into that room and into that relationship. As I walked away from that workshop in February, I remembered how big an impact a college instructor had had on me when encouraging all of us in the classroom to listen more than we spoke. The professor pointed out that we might as well be quiet every once in a while because, as he put it, you already know what you think. But what this conversational workshop led me to realize is that sometimes, especially when something feels especially fraught and loaded, we may need to hear ourselves clearly first in order to fully engage someone else. So it may not always be true that you do already know what you think or what you feel. Part of the power of this for me was the essential reminder that I cannot and should not attempt to talk someone out of their truth. I'm going to say that again because I think it's really important. I cannot and should not try to talk someone else out of their truth. It is their truth. And they have every right to it. Every right to it. I can't talk you out of your truth any more than I can talk you out of your life experience. Ain't going to happen. And shouldn't. Your views, your thoughts, your opinions, and your ideas are all a byproduct of your living. Where you have been, what you have seen, whom you have loved, and how you have been hurt are all brought to bear in every conversation. Perhaps you, like me, have had that experience of realizing in the middle of a conversation, or more likely with me, it's always after the fact, that you were speaking out of some past wound in a conversation you were just having, that it was no longer about the person you were actually talking to. It had to do with something Dad said to you when you were 18. Had something to do with what your sibling told you when you were 25. And you were just taking it all out on this other person. It had nothing to do with them. Or you realize that the reason you got so angry was because the way the other person was speaking to you reminded you of, or at least some little part of you, of the way that someone else used to speak to you that you found so patronizing. Or maybe you were simply in a bad mood, and the whole conversation got derailed for a reason that had nothing to do with what was said at all. My friends, conversations can be very crowded places, full of everything that each person involved has ever said or done or thought about saying. Sometimes, perhaps even most of the time, it seems to me that it is all true. Your view and mine, your story and history and mine. And rather than moving toward conflict or argument, we could see our differences as an invitation. Is there more? How did that come to be true for you? What in your life has shaped that perspective? Let me conclude this morning's message with an anecdote that I hope puts all of this in the broadest possible context. In the context that is what we want and hope for in seeking meaning and connection in our lives. I was reading the transcript of a TED Talk by Dave Isay, the man who founded a remarkable project called StoryCorps. It's a project that started with a recording booth, an audio recording booth, set up in the middle of Grand Central Station. station in New York City so that people could bring someone into the booth with them and with the help of a facilitator, record an interview. So people would bring their grandparent in with them or their child or a friend and just interview them and record it. And he has an archive now of over 100,000 people sharing some of their story, ages 5 to 105, recorded all over the place, small towns, big cities, you name it. And in reflecting on why so many of the life stories shared in these interviews bring tears to those who listen to them, Issei said he is convinced that it has to do with the fact that all of the stories in the StoryCorps, quote, speak to our mortality, end quote. Toward the end of his talk, Issei says, and I quote, "There's a hospice doctor named Ira Bayak who has worked closely with us on recording interviews with people who are dying. He wrote a book called The Four Things That Matter Most, about the four things you want to say to the most important people in your life before they or you die. Here are the four things. You ready? Thank you. I love you. Forgive me. I forgive you." End quote. In the end, I think we argue and forcefully assert our truth because we want to feel understood, appreciated, and yes, even loved. We want others to value us, to know who we are, and to love us for who we are. In order for that to happen, we will need to express gratitude and love, and perhaps most especially some days, forgiveness. No matter how wonderful our intentions or how deeply held our convictions, we will continue to bump up against truths that are equally and simultaneously real. Thank you. I love you. Forgive me. I forgive you. Is there more? May there be more for each of us. May we, right along with St. Francis, pray to be understood more than to understand, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, and it is in pardoning that we are pardoned. Ain't that the truth? I began with that reading in which Claire Huang Kingsley said people often made the mistake of thinking that she was only white and then thought that that misperception had everything to do with the way she looked and nothing to do with the way they saw. What a fascinating little nugget that is. Friends, we need to see deeply. We need to see like we aren't always right. Amen? Can I get an amen? We make mistakes. We step on each other's toes. We say things we oughtn't say. And as the reading of Atonement in the back of our hymnal says, we forgive ourselves and we forgive each other and we begin again in love. So may it always